Welcome into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Marquise Munson with you live here on a Football Friday. ESPN 102.5, The Game. Boys, here we go. Home opener coming up on Sunday. The boys are back on the ice. College football this weekend.
UTC, baby. Coming to town. 28-point dog. Let's go, Mox. Oh, wait.
Things change, Mox.
Walla, walla, wah, 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 wah.
You know, I don't want your life.
You know, now that you did that, you have yet to give a wake-up call during the football season.
I
think you're due.
Let me turn off my headset.
Hold on, let me get in proper position.
Yep, you're go ready? Ahead. Okay. There it is.
And your Tennessee Vols take the field.
They should have me do that for them, and I'm pretty sure.
That'll motivate them.
They run through the T after yes. that. Listen to Derek Warble, and then we run through the T.
Yes.
I love a good morning warble.
Yes.
Who doesn't?
It wakes you up.
All right, we got so much to get to today. We've got Titans. We've got Vols. We've got college football. Preds back on the ice. But we got to get to the Thursday night game last night.
Oh, my God.
Can we just get rid of Thursday night football? I would never complain for the rest of my life if I didn't have to watch a Thursday night football game.
This early? Wow. I mean.
Yeah, I'm not with you on that one.
Really?
Yeah, maybe in another month or two, then yeah, but not this early.
Well, the product with 4 days to prepare, it's just eh. It's
well, not get, really. Get ready because we got one next week coming
up.
No,
I know.
It's not really. I don't think it's as much. It's just the guys. It's not the preparation. It's just the guys that are still tired. But once you get in the game, and I'm telling you, once you get in the game, once you get your body going, you're back. You don't even think about it unless you have one of those just nagging injuries that you just can't get
over. You
mean
like maybe a bum ankle and a bum shoulder?
Exactly.
Like that,
something like that. But, I mean, this was a game that you thought both quarterbacks had to look good. Well, only one of them looked good, and that was Jameis Winston. After they had that weather delay, Jameis came out and, you know, he threw a touchdown pass. He had one dropped. He put some passes on the mark yesterday. He looked as if, you know, he put last week's game behind him very quickly because he went there against a very good defense and played pretty well for a guy that has been struggling.
I mean, Luke Kuechly dropped an interception that Jameis threw right to him. In the third quarter, they were – I don't know. The whole thing to me was just sloppy. Like, the whole thing, to your point, Nick, it just wasn't – I don't know if it's Bucks-Panthers that just doesn't do it for me maybe. And that's – I don't want to be guilty of sort of, you know, not liking the brands or whatever because I know we complain about that here with the Titans. And I know Titans – a lot of people look at the Titans the same way. I might look at that Bucks-Panthers game last night. I love watching McCaffrey play. Normally, I love watching Cam Newton play.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't look like Cam Newton. I mean, I don't – like, sure, Jameis Winston might have looked a little bit better than the average Jameis Winston who's turned the ball over like 80 times in 60 career games. But, you know, and give him credit for a big win on the road. But, like, Cam Newton is the story for me coming out of this game. Like, he does not look like the same player. And I don't blame him at all for that, especially with the pounding and the beating his body has taken. But neither of those quarterbacks, like, those were not great games. Those were bad games. And I'm starting to wonder, you know, we talk about how great the quarterback play is across the league, and I wonder if because the rule changes have happened and because the position, they've made it easier to play the position, that more mediocre talent, and I'm not saying Cam is mediocre, he was an elite talent at one time because he's a freakoid, right? He's a transformer. But maybe we've made it so easy to play the position that we're giving chances to guys that just, you know, maybe normally would never have gotten a crack at it, and maybe we're dumbing it down a little bit. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No. Yeah.
But Cam did not look like the superhero that Cam used to be. Mm-hmm. He looked like a guy that's on the way out of the league, is what he looked like.
He looks like
night.
A boxer out of his prime.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
he's like a boxer
exactly
that's fighting
right, yeah.
too long,
yeah.
and that is just trying to, you know, get that one last hurrah, that one last big punch, so he can go out, you know, on top. And Cam, he just looks like a shell of himself. Now, I know he might be dealing with injuries. More than likely, he is. And if so, then that is the Carolina Panthers' fault. Don't put this guy out there if he's not ready to play. Because, listen, Cam looks smaller. He doesn't look enthusiastic.
Yeah, the lethargy.
The energy is just not there. And I know it's Thursday night, but he looked like that last week.
Well, how many times throughout his career over 7 or 8 years has he ran the read option, the wildcat, the single wing? I mean, he's been a
quarterback sneak.
He's been a freaking sledgehammer playing the quarterback position. Yeah. You're not going to last 15 years. You think he's going to have a Tom Brady longevity playing the way he does?
No, he's going to call it quits pretty soon here, if indeed he continues to play
He's got 1 year left on his contract. He's going to make $100 million or whatever the deal was. If you make $120 million and you hit 30 years old, I wouldn't be, look at what Andrew Luck just did. I wouldn't be surprised if he walked away,
guys.
I wouldn't
if he just called it quits. But
other interests off the football field, clearly, with his fashion.
I don't think Carolina will move past him. Like, after this season, I don't think they will I think they're going to give him another contract because they know that they're pushing him a little bit too much. And they, if he's not on the field, they really don't have a chance to win. You know, so even with McCaffrey.
Right.
They really don't have a chance to win.
To me, that is where, and I loved Andrew Brandt's commentary on this a couple of days ago on the show, and that's where I bring it back to Marcus. And that is because there is what Andrew Brandt said on the show, which kind of just hit me like a boxer punching me in the face, just going, wait a second, I hadn't thought about it that way. That's totally true. There is no middle ground for quarterback contracts anymore. You're either on a rookie deal or you're on these $25 to $35 million contracts. There's not the Jacoby Brissett contract is the anomaly. The fact that he's getting paid, I think, $15 million a year for 2 years, something like that.
That's because that had to be done quickly,
right? And other than that, you know, the old Blake Bortles deal, like nobody has that contract anymore. Andy Dalton is the last one who signed a long term deal that was in that $15, $16, $17 million range, and that's what brings us back to Marcus. It's like, do you want to be stuck with a backup level player or a non-starting level player who basically gives you zero chance to win for however many years before you find your guy, which could be 2 years, it could be 5 years, it could be 12 years, you don't know. You're taking a risk there. Or do you just like sack up and pay a guy $25 million because that's what you have to do now if you want to have Cam Newton, Matt Stafford, Jameis Winston, guys that are not elite level players. You just have to pay him, and that's sort of where I come at Marcus. I don't think he's an elite-level player. I have no idea if he can win you a Super Bowl. But what's the alternative? You know, like, right now he's winning games, and again, there's no middle ground.
Compared to the alternatives from last night, like, Marcus is better than both of those guys.
Right, and if I would have told you in this summer that we're going to watch two games and think Marcus is better than Cam, you would have told me I was insane. Because Cam's got an MVP, and he's been to a Super Bowl and all this stuff. Maybe it's because his body's breaking down, and that's certainly fair, and I want to be fair to that part of the equation because, you know, you got to give credit for playing Cam playing the way he's played. But really, just going back to the money of this, it's like, so what does Carolina do then in that situation, D? Like, if he walks – if that contract runs out next year, and he plays a whole other year looking like last night. So he plays two seasons looking like last night. There's no way you could tell me that's worth $28 million a year.
Well, I mean,
But what's your choice?
He's Cam Newton. I mean, you can't tag him. I mean, he's so far – tagging him would mean giving him close to $40 million a year. And you don't want to tag the quarterback for 1 year. If you're going to do a deal, you just hope that he realizes that this deal is a deal to keep him on his team no matter what. Even because you're paying backups now. It's going to get to a point where you're going to be paying backups double digits.
$9-10 million.
Yeah. To just hold a clipboard. And I'm pretty sure there's no other business, I mean, after leaving football, unless you just, you know, get you a business where it's just pushing money, there's no other business where you can just sit back, hold a clipboard, and make $10 million for nothing.
Well,
for 16 weeks.
If Cam's taking that $100 million and invest it correctly, he can just have it sit in a hedge fund and he'll make a ton of money.
No, but he's not going to make $10 million off of that.
But I think he might walk away because, you know, just the beating or whatever. Who knows? Again, it's all speculation. But it just struck me watching him going, all right, he's going to be up from a contract, which means the Panthers have to look at an aging, deteriorating product as an asset and say, do we want to pay this person? Because the only options now are like a $3 million backup or a $27 million starter. There's not really anybody in between anymore, which is what the Titans are looking at with Marcus. It's what the Jags had to look at with Nick Foles. It's what you have to do now. And so it's just the cost of doing business. All of these guys are overpaid. If Marcus gets $25 million, I'll be the first one to say, yeah, he's overpaid. But what are your other options as an NFL franchise? And your other options are, You know, look, Sam Darnold's got mono. Like, these guys, they have a shelf life, and they're fragile, and things happen to them. The guys that are 42 years old and slinging it at Super Bowl levels, there's like three of them. Like, they're rare. They're not that's not a thing you can go find. You cannot go find Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. You can't just go get that at the store. Like, it's Trevor Lawrence, and that's it. You know, like, that guy's coming along in 2 years. Outside of that, I don't know what your plan is for quarterback moving forward, except for paying them big dollars.
All right, it's Morning Drive. We're live this morning from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Here's what we have coming up on the show today. Josh Ward from Knoxville is going to join us at 6:30. Teron Davenport at 7:30. And our buddy Adam Vingan at 9 o'clock this morning. We'll come back. We'll get to the Titans and the Colts, handicap the game, who wins and why, and obviously, big ceremony on Sunday. And also, one member in this room of Morning Drive on the 2020 Pro Football Hall of Fame ballot. It's not me and Braden.
It's not Nick.
No, although I think I should be on.
Yeah, should.
Back after this. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise with you. Titans, Colts coming up on Sunday. I was thinking about this game last night, boys. I've got my prediction ready to go. I like the Titans this week. I like the Titans 24-20, and I was thinking about this.
I'm terrified of this game.
Colts coming off of a road game, West Coast trip. Titans coming off of a beatdown of the Browns. Steve and Eddie being honored. 16 of your last 20 at Nissan Stadium, which really makes no sense because there's no home field advantage, yet they kick ass in that building. And I don't believe in Jacoby Brissett. So I'm going Titans just a smidge above the number, which is 3, Titans by 4.
So normally you'd wait till like 9:30. We'd have like a big ceremony and present our predictions. First of all, I think predictions are stupid, just in general.
That's why we do it.
And to your point on that?
But you're going early on this.
Like, last year I picked the Titans to go 10-6. They went 9-7. But how they arrived there, week to week, I was virtually wrong every week.
And I kind of like the Colts, to be honest with you. I think you nailed it in your write-up on Athlon Sports, by the way. It's a line of scrimmage battle, because those Colts defense, if you go back and really watch the Colts defensive line, part of the reason Darius Leonard had such a great season last year, and this is every great middle linebacker ever will tell you, or linebacker, is if you've got more room to run, you're going to make more plays. And the way that happens is having those big uglies up front take up blockers, right? And so if all those guys up front for Indianapolis are taking up space and taking up blockers, I'm not sure that Darius Leonard doesn't track Derrick Henry down on every play, or Deion Lewis. So you have to stick with it. You're going to have to get to the second level on some of these blocks, and you're asking a lot of Jameel Douglas to be able to do that and Ben Jones to be able to do that. I don't know if they can do that. On the flip side, if you're looking at the run game matchup and all those athletes that they have on the offensive line running around in space and pulling and all these crazy run plays, I like the Colts matchup there too. If it turns into a passing game, that's where I like the Titans. But this feels like a lower scoring, running the football type of game. And if it gets into that type of game, the Titans are sort of at the disadvantage in both situations. So I'm a little more nervous about this game than you are.
Well, at the end of this weekend, there will be two teams that are 0-2 in this division.
That's correct.
And one either, you know, 2-0 or 1-1, and the other either 1-1 in this division, because Houston has Jacksonville this weekend. But, you know, I look at this game and I look at it in two parts, because I look at the team that scored 43 points, and I just look at the 43 points, and I look at what they did the last quarter of the game against Cleveland. And I say, I believe the Titans are going to go into Nissan Stadium.
I still think it should be called a Coliseum.
Yes, Nissan Stadium, and I think they're going to win. I think they will beat Indianapolis. And it'll be a close game, but I think they will never really be in a position to lose the game. If I'm looking at the score, 43-13 in the last quarter, not really the whole last quarter, but like the last 8 or 9 minutes of the game, the way the defense played lights out, he had interceptions, you know, Derrick Henry ran the ball exceptionally well. If I look at it from that standpoint, I believe the Titans win, because I don't think Indianapolis can beat that team. There's not many people that can beat that team.
Not when the snowball happens.
Absolutely. But if I'm watching the game from quarter number one to quarter number three, and maybe even a 2 or 3 minutes beyond quarter number three, then I think that the Titans are going to have a very difficult time at winning this football game for several reasons. The pass game of the Tennessee Titans wasn't that good. The offensive line of the Tennessee Titans wasn't that good. The run game sort of kind of it was off and on, but they stuck with it, which I was impressed. That part I did like. When talking about Arthur Smith, he was dedicated to the run. He was going to stick with it, come hell or high water. But because of the way this team played for three quarters and 2 minutes, then I think it's going to be very difficult for the Titans to walk into Nissan Stadium and beat the Indianapolis Colts, because I watched the Colt game, and the Colts should have won that game. They lost that game. They gave that game to the Chargers. And if they play the same way they played against the Chargers, and the Titans play the way they played for three quarters, the Titans will not beat them. But I hope that because of the last 8 minutes, that kind of started this snowball effect, and they will be able to take it into Nissan Stadium.
Now, again, I think, you know, the Derrick Henry touchdown pass, I believe, came right at the end of the third quarter. So they went up 22-13. With a minute or so to go. And the very next possession, they got the interception.
Exactly.
And that's when it snowballed. But, you know, they were up 22-13 in the third quarter. So, but I agree with your point. It looked a little rusty. It wasn't, you know, there was a lot of things you could critique about the Titans offense. And so, you know, a couple of drives on the Titans defense. There were two drives, you know, the very first drive for the Browns and then the very last drive before the Derrick Henry play. Baker Mayfield went right down the field and scored. So, but that's going to happen in football. You're going to have a couple bad drives and a couple good ones. I just think, and this is the crazy thing, and I said it on Monday, I've said it Tuesday, said it Wednesday and Thursday, I think the Colts are the better team than the Browns right now. I don't think that's going to be true at the end of the year. I think, you know, once the Browns come together, but like the discipline, the penalties, the turnovers, the sacks, that ain't going to happen this week. You're not going to sack Jacoby Brissett five times. That offensive line's too good. They're not going to have 18 penalties. They're a better team than that.
No, they're well coached.
They're a better coached, well organized, more cohesive unit right now today than the Browns are, and they are going to line up and pound you, and they're going to do it with all different types of running formations, and their guards are going to pull and all this crazy stuff, and you're going to have to be on top of it. There's going to be a lot of movement, right? Like, and if you look at, like, every team does pre-snap formational stuff, right? Like every team does this or does that or moves here, moves there. Some people do it with purpose, and some people do it to disguise and to cover up, and some people just
window dressing.
And some people do it just to do window dressing. The Browns felt like they were just doing it to be window dressing. Frank Reich is doing it for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's doing whatever he's doing is to get you out of position, give away your coverage. I just think the whole situation is tougher because they're more of a collective. They're more of a team right now. The Browns may be much better by week 7 or week 12 or whatever. But I just think the Colts are far tougher matchup, not only from personnel standpoint, but just from a team standpoint. I think the Colts are a better quote-unquote team right now. Does that make sense? Like, they're just – I think they're all on the same page more than Cleveland is.
Sure. Well, they've been together longer. They've got a rallying cause with Andrew Luck retiring. It makes total sense. Sunday, Eddie George, Steve McNair will be honored by the Tennessee Titans. Let's take a listen to number 27 talking about the atmosphere on Sunday and the challenge he's laying down for the fans.
You know, I'm praying that the ministers this Sunday wrap up their services early, right around, you know, 10:30. You know, let's postpone all, you know, we honor God, we love God, we can bring him to the Titan Stadium. Because I really want to see that stadium full right at kickoff, loud. You know, I'm challenging the fans, you know, to stand as much as possible during this game, because we're going to need everybody to overcome this hurdle. You know, I think the fans are itching. They're waiting for to really, truly believe. I mean, they've been on the cusp. Last year they beat the Eagles, then they lose. Like, ah. So we gotta get the signature win to have them believe so it can really be on fire like it was when we played. I mean, it was standing room only. It was loud. It was intimidating. And it has to be like that for those guys. And I think they're really close. I really do. I think Now look at this team. Again, the spirit of this team, they play together and they trust each other. And that's the difference. And again, if you compromise that in any way, shape or form, that's when you're done. That's when you're done. So that was really the core of my message to them, is to protect that special unity, because it doesn't happen a lot in this league. And once you got it, you keep it, you hold on to it. And a great example of that is New England.
All right, there you go. Eddie George yesterday imploring the fans to show up and show out.
Have you guys changed your opinion at all about what the crowd's going to look like? Or do you have an opinion? Yeah. Like, I know we asked Teresa Walker. She said she thought there'd be a lot of empty seats. Then we asked Joe Rexroad yesterday, and he thought, well, it could be pretty close to full. So I think that we already have, you know, varying.
Yeah, I'm closer to Rexroad. I think there'll be some scattered seats at the top, empty.
Like 5-10 grand empty, maybe?
Yeah, but I would say probably close to 55, 60,000.
I think they're going.
I think it'd be a good show.
Indy fans are going to travel, and that's going to help with the stadium being completely full. Is this a signature game for them? No, because people are, no matter what they do, no matter what they do, people are always going to. They're still going to say, "You never beat Andrew Luck in Indianapolis."
Bingo.
Coach. That's what they're all. Yeah. No matter. If I'm a player, I don't care.
No,
we
just get the 2-0 this week.
We're 1-0 in the division. Who cares?
The signature win. It's not this one.
No,
I agree.
It's not this game.
You.
This game wouldn't be the signature win. A signature win would be second round in the playoffs. You know, that would be a signature win.
Beating the Patriots at home like that, they did last year.
You know, winning a game that wins you the division, which you hadn't won in a very long time, outright. You hadn't won in a very long time. That would be, to me, a signature win. This game, second game of the season, it helps them get closer to their goal, which is, first, winning the division, and then, two, getting into the playoffs and getting a bye in the playoffs, and then, obviously, getting into the AFC Championship game. But this just helps them get closer to their goal, the end goal, and that is the AFC Championship game.
I mean, I hate to go all Belichick on you guys, but I know you guys both love him. It's like, this is the Super Bowl this year. This week is the Super Bowl. We're going to play the Colts. Colts is the most important game on the schedule. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is the only game you can play is the one you're playing this week. And
you can play two of them if you want.
I mean, I suppose that seems sort of stupid.
What are you, Ernie Banks?
let's play two, boys. Hey, I think it's a pretty big game psychologically, too. You're coming off a big win. You want to continue success, maintain momentum against a team that we think is better than the Browns. You're at home. If you were to lose, I just think there's a psychological drop-off if you lose this game. Because if you lose this game, you're back to questioning yourself, because not only can we not beat the Colts with Andrew Luck, now we can't beat them with Jacoby Brissett. We lost a home game, and we lost in the division early after a lot of confidence in week one. It sets up for – I think this team and this culture is sort of letdown proof, to be honest with you. I think Vrabel and John Robinson have built a team that is designed to sort of avoid the letdown. Like Derek always says, we're going to compete against our own standard every single week. But this one would hurt a little bit more. If you were to lose this game, it stings just a little bit more because of the situation, no Luck, at home, division, and to start the year 1-1. Like, you start 2-0 without Taylor Lewan, you feel so differently about the future of the season.
Sure.
If you go 1-1 and one of those losses is at home to a Jacoby Brissett team in the division, you feel very different. So this is I know every game, we're going to say this every Friday, right? This is a huge game. But this feels like a pretty big moment for the team to sort of decide what it's going to be this year. They're the better team. They should win the game. And if they go out and do that, all of a sudden you're going, we reached 2-2 at least without Taylor Lewan.
All right, we will get to D-Mace and Canton coming up in just about 20 minutes. But up next, speaking of team, speaking of culture, we'll get the latest on Knoxville. The UT Chattanooga Mocs invade Neyland Stadium as a 4-touchdown dog. Can Jeremy Pruitt get off the schneid? We'll talk to Josh Ward from WNML coming up next. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The Game, 6:32, live here on a Football Friday. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise, as we send it up Route 40 to Knoxville. Josh Ward, WNML, joins us as he does each and every Friday on the show. Josh, happy Friday. How are you?
Hey, doing well. Great to be with you guys.
Good to have you in. So Bryce Thompson, Jeremy Pruitt reinstates him, brings him back to the team from a practice standpoint. Is it more about getting him ready to be in game shape for Florida the following week? Like, are we actually going to see him on the field this weekend, or is he still a week plus away?
I would say a week plus away. I don't think that he's going to play on Saturday. I also don't entirely buy the football playing shape. I would imagine he could go out there and play against Chattanooga. No, he's not been practicing with the team, but he did practice for most of August, and it's not like he's coming back from an injury. But he still has the legal process to go through. He has a court date the week following the Florida game. That's why next week becomes really interesting, because it's, of course, a big game, and he is now practicing with the team. But Jeremy Pruitt was not really specific on the plan or what obstacles he has to go through to be playing on Saturdays. Jeremy was not specific for a reason. But the expectation is that Bryce will not play this Saturday, as he has just been with the team for a limited time starting this past Wednesday, so the last couple of days. Next week, let's see, and I don't know if we'll get an answer before the Florida game from Jeremy Pruitt. He might continue to be vague, but that's the real question, what happens next week.
Josh, admittedly, none of us are psychologists here, but this reeks of desperation, though. I don't know how they could determine whether or not Bryce Thompson has solved his whatever issues in this period of time. It strikes me as we're 0-2. We need some help. That may not be fair. Jeremy Pruitt might have had a bunch of people meet with him and sit down with him and had a lot of conversations with him. We are not of the belief that he should be kicked off the team, because that probably doesn't help him solve any problems. So there is an element of put your arms around this young man and try to help him. But giving him playing time against Florida isn't necessarily going to help the problem. What is it that you think has happened that has allowed him to now be a part of the team again?
Well, it is easy to say, well, one thing that's happened is Tennessee has started 0-2. It's easy to come back with that, isn't it? And I don't know. I don't know what's really happened. I've been open saying on my radio show and on my podcast, and I'll say to you guys, I mean, I hope that there are people at Tennessee, important people at Tennessee, who are focused on getting him help and not just helping him get on the football field. If it works out with football, great. But with the allegations that are there, with some of the things he has admitted to, it's very clear that Bryce needs some help, and that's for him as much as other people as well, I would say that. So I can't tell you one way or the other whether I'm confident that's happened, but I am very confident that that's something that needs to have happened and will need to happen moving forward. This has still only been a few weeks since a lot of this has come out publicly. And another thing we don't know. We don't know what was going on before the alleged incident back in August. And we don't know what Tennessee was doing or not doing to try to help him in his personal life. Was Tennessee just hoping everything would be okay and making sure he was ready to play football, or was Tennessee doing more? If Tennessee was just focusing on the football side, then Tennessee's not doing enough.
Now, when they – I've always wondered about this Vol team after they had the team-only meeting. And then you have a guy transfer right after that. Is there anything that you have come across that was said in that team-only meeting? Because as a former player, it seems to me that maybe Juwan Jennings, Garantano challenged a lot of guys, and maybe one guy in particular didn't take that too kindly and just decided to transfer, because it all sort of kind of happened kind of funny with that whole ordeal. But have you found on anything that might have happened within that meeting that caused them really to play a lot better, even though in a loss, play a lot better than they did against Georgia State?
Right. Not specific, but what's been hinted at is what you're alluding to there, I would say, is when you have Juwan Jennings make the public comments that he did, and also in that week, a few days after, Jeremy Pruitt is talking about players trying to figure out if they want to be at Tennessee for the right reasons, that was voiced by older guys like Juwan Jennings. Some guys are more vocal than others. Marquez Callaway was talking about making sure players keep their confidence up, and I think that's part of it as well. Is, you know, Juwan Jennings' public message included the "Don't fight for one game, fight for 12 games." And I think some of the veterans have attempted to make sure that younger players, or just players on the team in general, that they recognize that there is a lot of work that still has to be done and make sure that the buy-in is still there. And it is a good sign that effort was there this past Saturday against BYU. Let's see if Tennessee keeps that up, because we were able to see individual games last year where Tennessee overcame adversity and came out and played really well and was fired up, but they weren't able to keep that going for 12 games. That's a challenge in the locker room. That's a challenge for Jeremy Pruitt and the coaching staff, especially with Tennessee not getting the result it wanted. The process message that they hear so much about, when if things don't go well for you, are you going to continue to try to fight through? In the past, that's been a real challenge for Tennessee. They did not fight through the end of last season. It kept Tennessee from getting to the postseason. Let's see what Tennessee looks like in a noon kickoff where the crowd's not going to be quite as into it or quite as large. Won't be close, probably. Let's see if Tennessee is into the game against Chattanooga.
Josh, that's actually where I was going to go next. Like, what is the psyche of the fan base right now? Because you mentioned it's an early start. It's a team that you're a four-touchdown favorite against. And I'm trying to play out all the scenarios in my head. If they lose, like they did to Georgia State, it's a complete disaster. The boat is sinking, all of that. If they win a close game, you don't feel great about it. I feel like short of 59-0, you really don't come away with much. It feels almost like a no-win situation for the Vols, barring a 60-point beatdown. What do you expect from the fans tomorrow, and is that place going to have 30,000 empty seats?
Oh, it'll have more than 30,000 empty seats, I'm sure. The crowd was great this past Saturday. I thought it was a really good atmosphere Saturday night. I thought it would be. I know that it was a disappointing loss to Georgia State, but fans came out and responded, and they had a good crowd. It wasn't full, but it was packed. And fans were into the game, and then the result was so disappointing. Now you have, as I mentioned, a noon Eastern time kickoff against Chattanooga. I think it's going to be close to half full, maybe a little bit more than that. But you're probably right in the no-win situation, because even if Tennessee wins the game, it is supposed to. If Tennessee blows out Chattanooga, it looks really good. That won't get more fans to the game this Saturday. Then you have the Florida game. If Tennessee does lose next week in Gainesville, then you have two long weeks leading up to the Georgia game. That one's back at home, and your fear there is that Georgia comes in and packs your stadium. Now, if Tennessee's able to pull off an upset, that changes the conversation entirely. Next week, I'm talking about against Florida. If Tennessee goes to Gainesville and pulls that game out, which seems like an incredible long shot, then that can really change the trajectory of the season and the fan base's mindset and everything. But if that doesn't happen, which is the expectation, then it can get really ugly really quick.
Josh, good stuff as always. We appreciate the time. Thanks, bud.
You got it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville. I'm telling you, if I was a Vols fan and I was married, I'd look at my wife and be like, yeah, 11 o'clock. You got any plans Saturday?
Earn some points this weekend.
This is the weekend we could do the pumpkin patch.
So, again, I totally see that point, right? Like, this is going to be worthless. This isn't going to be fun, blah, 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 blah. Let's try to earn some points on the honey-do list here, because I know I've got bigger games coming. Wouldn't you rather watch them crush Chattanooga than get crushed by Georgia or Alabama or Florida?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think it's a debate.
I would.
I mean, I think I'd like.
At least we could celebrate.
I feel like I know.
Like, I would take no pride in beating UT Chattanooga 35-7.
No, but you
like, how about 45-7?
But what's the point of being a fan? Is to watch a team win a game and celebrate with your other fans that won the game and.
But it's the reality of where you're at right now with the program. I know.
Trust me, I know.
But, like, I would take no salt. Like, I couldn't. Like, if I sat down as a Vols fan and watched that game in Nashville at 2 o'clock when I got off my couch and Tennessee wins 49-3, I would go about my business as if those 3 hours didn't exist.
Yeah, but at least you'd have a smile on your face.
I don't know that I would have a smile. I'm being dead serious. I'm not trying to be devil's advocate. I don't know that I'd be smiling.
No, I think you have to be after being 0-2 against two group, non-Power 5 teams. I think you have to. Any positive you've got to take as some sort of joy. You've got to find joy somehow, right? Like, otherwise,
relish,
what's the point of being
relishing a moment?
Yeah, like, you got to enjoy it at least for the time being. It doesn't mean that it's not going to suck next week or the week after that or whatever, but a positive momentum, it gives you maybe just a glimmer of hope going into the swamp. A lot of the feels around that game against Florida are going to depend on, and we can get into this when we come back, Kentucky-Florida is a huge game. That I know there's not a lot of marquee matchups in college football this weekend, but that's a really big game for everybody in the East. If Kentucky gets blown out, it establishes Florida. If Kentucky wins, it gives Tennessee fans, frankly, hope that they can beat Florida. There's a lot that's at stake, rippling effect out of that Kentucky-Florida game right now, and the Gators are a near double-digit favorite on the road. I think it's like, 8.5?
It is.
Yikes.
Payback.
That's a big game in the SEC East for all the teams, not just Florida and Kentucky.
615-737-1025. The number if you want to jump in, 737-1025. We'll come back. Little SEC football talk, and also Derek Mason on the list, the nominees for Canton 2020. Back after this, Morning Drive. Back in on a Friday Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're going to get to Canton in just a moment, but coming off the Josh Ward interview and, you know, a couple of things in the East, huge one. It's Kroger Field, I believe, they now call it.
Whatever, I'm going to call it Commonwealth. It's fine.
It's Kroger Field at Commonwealth Stadium?
At least it's not Kroger's Field. At least they didn't say, you know, multiple Krogers. I can't stand. That's one of those weird things that, like, I know it's a me problem, but I can't get over it, like the Mariota thing. The fact that people say Kroger's with an S just drives me insane. I don't know why that drives me insane.
Costco's.
See, and I've never heard that one.
I used to say that. I used to mess with people. It's just Costco's.
You go to Sam's Club because it has an apostrophe S in the name.
That is correct.
Anyway, I don't. It's a me thing. I get it. I'm sorry. It's my problem. I'm working through my demons, guys. Okay, just let me deal with it. Florida looked exceptional in week two. Felipe Franks looked exceptional. What UT Martin? Okay, what's the level of competition there? We don't know.
It feels like, you know what it is though with the Gators? It feels like it's been a month, and maybe it has been, or 3 weeks since that Miami game.
It's been a long
time. That feels like ages ago.
Now, the defense is legit. The defense traveled in both games, and the defense is exceptional. So this is going to be a great test for Felipe Franks. Number one, what are we going to learn from Kentucky and Florida? It's mostly Felipe Franks, because this is a guy who has ability, has a talent, shows that talent on occasion, and then in some big games against good teams, doesn't always deliver on that. Now, he wasn't great against Miami, but he was good enough. He made the big long throw to, I think it was Van Jefferson, down the middle for about 70 yards, got them inside the 10-yard line that eventually gave them the game-winning touchdown. So he did make the plays when he needed to win that game, but he wasn't particularly good. This is one of those spots where you know defensively, even though the secondary from Kentucky has some questions, that this is where you need to go be a star. Go make sure your team wins this game. You're an 8.5-point favorite on the road against the team that beat you last year for the first time in 31 years. You need to go up there and win the game because the defense is going to do its job. They're starting a first-time quarterback in Sawyer Smith, who's replacing Terry Wilson. And it does set the tone for both teams for the rest of the year. If Florida comes out of this 3-0, they'll have a road win over Kentucky, and they'll have a neutral site win over Miami.
That's a solid start.
With a 3-0 record going into SEC play, that's a good start to the season for them with Power 5 wins. If Kentucky loses, they're coming out of this going, we lost our quarterback, we're 0-1 in the conference, and we've got all of our games, tough games in front of us. Having not played anybody, Toledo and Eastern Michigan aren't terrible teams, but they're not exactly world beaters. So it's a really crucial pivot point in the season for both teams. If Kentucky were to win, Florida's looking at itself going, what are we this year? And maybe Tennessee feels more confident about that game in the Swamp if they lose. So this is a big moment for Florida to go on the road and prove that it belongs at the number two spot in the SEC East.
I know Terry Wilson has been a winner, 10 wins last year, and we've labeled him in towards the bottom half, well, certainly the bottom half, maybe the bottom four or five quarterbacks in this conference. And no disrespect to Terry Wilson, the kid's a winner. But is losing Terry Wilson and going to Sawyer Smith a drastic fall off?
That's a great question.
I don't know that it is.
That's the great question with this team, because Sawyer Smith, again, we talked about it yesterday a little bit. He was 5-2 as a starter at Troy last year. I think he threw 4 touchdown passes and was the MVP of the bowl game for Troy last year. So experience throwing the football in games. He is not some, you know, redshirt freshman that hasn't played a game, right? He's got experience. So that you're comfortable there. Is he a better passer of the football than Terry Wilson? And the answer might be yes. So now, from a leadership, intangibles, all those other things Terry brought to the table, sure. We saw Steven Johnson, the quarterback for Kentucky, in year one was garbage, and year two was great. So we saw a lot of growth. It looked like Terry Wilson had taken strides. That's what you're disappointed about. But again, what does Sawyer Smith bring to the table? Maybe a more vertical passing game. And I don't look, Florida's defensive front is absolutely nasty. So he's going to be running for his life. I don't know how well they're going to run the ball. I like the fact, you know, the fact that Florida's an 8.5-point favorite on the road tells me all I need to know about what Vegas thinks about how good Florida is in this situation.
737-1025, the number. So I saw the tweet yesterday from Jim Wyatt. Five former Tennessee Titans among the nominees for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2020. Eddie George, Steve Hutchinson, Lorenzo Neal, Gary Anderson. I think kickers should not be included.
I love Gary.
But that's just my...
Gary won his ball game down in Baltimore with a very long field goal for a guy that was 40-something years old.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think like Justin Tucker, when it's all said and done, deserves...
Separate wing.
Yeah, he's, yeah.
Separate. You mean like there should be another like?
Yeah, another wing.
Like
to
it's
the
not
Hall
a full. You're not
yeah.
like a full.
Like when
like
you go into
the Hall of Famer.
Like if you go into Canton and you see all the position players in the Hall of Fame, like the kicker should be across from the bathroom stalls and the water fountain.
They
should
have plaques and not
yeah.
a bus.
Yeah, a little private section for them.
On the way to the diaper changing station.
Hey, there you go.
Oh, there's Tucker right there.
Yes,
he got a plaque and not a bus.
But the fifth Tennessee Titan, and I can't believe I'm going to put Derek Mason's name after Gary Anderson, but we want to talk about your candidacy. D-Mace, you're up there again. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, because I know you put out a tweet yesterday, and I didn't know this, but four different times with two different teams?
Yeah, I think, and because I sometimes forget, and I got to, and I'm honestly speaking here. Sometimes I forget that I was really good. I was damn good.
You were.
And it, because it was, I'm so far, almost so far removed from it, it's as if, and then here's the part that rubs me the wrong way. I love the city. That's why I moved back. But I'm not in a city where the team embraces how good I was with that particular team.
Why do you think that happened?
I don't know.
Because you played like 7 years for Baltimore.
Exactly.
Maybe?
But if I'm in Baltimore, I think they embrace that. Even though I was there for a shorter period of time, I became their all-time leading receiver. I think they would respect that more than what is here. Because for a four-year period, I was probably the best offensive weapon we had behind Steve for a 4 or 5 year period.
And you went
including Eddie George.
Yeah, that's including Eddie George.
Four seasons here with 1,000 yards, yeah. And then another 4,000-yard seasons
with Baltimore.
With Baltimore.
Yes.
Your numbers are basically identical to Hines Ward, uh-huh. Minus a few touchdowns.
Yeah. But I had to go about it a different way.
Very much.
Than Hines. And I think Hines is great. But I had to go about it a different way. Because if you take what I did from a special team standpoint and then you add in the receiving and what I meant to the start of every possession for about 2 years prior to me becoming a full-time receiver, that's why I said I don't think there was a – if you look at it and what I was able to do, there's not many people that from an offensive standpoint, and I'm not talking about offensive line because I love those guys to death, and I will put them ahead of everybody because we couldn't do any of it if we didn't have B-Hop and Frank who would block and Bruce and Benji and Zach and those guys, Kevin Long. So I put those guys front because we couldn't do it without them. But if you just look at it as a whole, when there were two games that I didn't play because of injury, the only two games I missed in my career, we suffered as an offensive unit. Why? Because their number one receiver wasn't on the field. We had some of our best offensive output with myself on the field and then Drew or Kevin. And I just don't think sometimes – I think sometimes they forget that part. And – it does rub me the wrong way. And y'all know how I am, man. If I got something to say in my feelings, I'm wearing them on my sleeve, and I'm saying it, and I'm going to move on. But it's an honor each and every year to see for the last 2 or 3 years, to see your name on that list. It's an honor because there are a lot of guys that played that are not on that list. A lot of guys that I idolized when I was younger that I watched play when I was playing, that I took tips from them, that are not on that list. So I'm honored to even be on that list.
But what's remarkable about your career is the numbers you put up considering the era of football, the teams you played on, and the styles of ball that they wanted to play, which were run first. I mean, you didn't play on one of these air raid teams, and you didn't have, to Hines Ward's point, you didn't have, no disrespect to Steve, you didn't have Ben Roethlisberger.
Well, outside of...
You didn't have Joe Montana and some of these legendary Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
Let's take Jerry Rice just out of the equation, right? Because he doesn't really belong in the equation with anybody, right? He's just Jerry Rice, so let's take him out of it.
It's the GOAT.
Do you think that it hurts your legacy at all from like a top-of-mind thought process? And maybe Hines Ward to some degree, too. Again, you guys finished 25th and 26th in the NFL all-time in receiving right now. Mm-hmm. You guys probably finished more like 17th or 18th because a lot of guys have... after your career have come along and in a different era and put up different yards. But you played basically in the exact same era as T.O., Randy Moss, Tony Gonzalez, you know, Steve Smith, Reggie Wayne, Torrey Holt. Like, these are guys that all played kind of in the same window as you. Mm-hmm. And I think certainly Moss and T.O., those guys, the way they grab the spotlight is just different, right? Like, not from a talent perspective, just from a personality perspective. Mm-hmm. Is it? Do you think that because that was the first golden era of receiving, that you get caught up in that era and people forget it? Like you said, you just said, I forget about how good I was, which is what it is. But like, do you think that that's hurts your case?
I think yes, to an extent. I think what happens is because I look at other guys and. Other guys were a little bit more flashy. Other guys were a little bit more vocal. They put themselves out there. My thing was just do my work and go about my business.
Like Anquan Boldin. Yeah. Anquan Boldin just kind of did it.
Yeah. And Hines did his work, but he was on such a great team. They went to Super Bowls. Yeah. And you know, when you consistently go to Super Bowls and then you win one, then you're an MVP. You get more notoriety, and then it doesn't hurt when you play for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But Hines is a terrific player, and eventually he will go in the Hall of Fame someday too as well. But I do think that because of that era of football, because it was just ushering into now we're starting to pass the ball more. But I was on two teams. That identity was to run the football and play hard-nosed defense. And it wasn't until Heimerdinger came where we started to open up the offense some. And we didn't even open it up as much as they did in Denver when he was there. We opened it up more than what we were. We were a pedestrian. We went to the Super Bowl with it, but we were a pedestrian offense. When Heimerdinger came, we became a little bit more explosive. We started to use our weapons, myself, Drew, Kevin, when he was healthy, in the passing game, Frank before he retired. And then we got Ben Troop and some other guys that were able to come in and contribute to that as well. So we still were a run team, but we had the dimension and an ability to throw the football when Steve was healthy. And even when he wasn't, when Billy Volek or O'Neal came in, we still continued to throw the football somewhat. But we were a run-based team, basically. And then I went to another run-based team. And, you know, I don't know. It's just...
But you're also a victim of the market you played in. You finished as a New York Jet for a brief stint.
Yeah.
Had you put those 8,000-yard seasons up with the New York Jets?
Oh, I would be.
Wayne Corbett style?
Yeah.
So you finished 19th. Currently you're 19th all time in receptions at 943. Again, all of the names that are like you're ahead of Hall of Famers, Art Monk, Steve Largent. Like those are guys that got in, but they played in such a different era, even more so than your era. But again, if you look at all the names above you on this list, it's Antonio Gates, Brandon Marshall, Randy Moss, Hines Ward, Isaac Bruce, Steve Smith, Andre Johnson, Reggie Wayne, Anquan Boldin, Teal. They're all modern. It's all new offenses that are going on here. I want to know how much would 1,000 have meant to you as a receiver? Like if you'd gotten to 1,000 receptions, how much would that have meant to you?
615-737-1025. The number, hour two of Morning Drive, is on the way here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.